You answer. Okay. I want to welcome everyone to the 8th shiur in the continuing shiurim on Chasim Masa Shas. I'm sure that some of you never thought Chasim Masa Shas could be as interesting. But Baruch Hashem, I think that based upon the number of hits we've been getting, some people, more than three people, find it interesting. At least, I hope. Okay, in any case, I want to go a bit further and to actually sing a little bit different ways in which we tell from the Rishonim the way the Talmud was redacted, which is a very, very important thing. I thought I would like to mention too, because we've had a little bit feedback from some people that basically we're not saying anything new. We're actually just reading into the Rishonim. In other words, the redaction of the Shas, our Shas, is just coming from reading from the words of the Rishonim. How did the Rishonim understand how the Shas was redacted? Now, there are some people, some of the scholars, believe in what's called historical truth. Okay? However, in Zlotnik's book, historical truth. Shaul Lieberman, in his Tosfos Rishonim, and I think it's in his Hakdama to the second Chelek on Tyrus, distinguishes between two types of truths. Actually, it's quoted in Zlotnik's book, The Iron Pillar of the Mishnah, but actually it's in the Tosfos Rishonim. There's two types of truths. I think this is important. So there's what's called historical truth, and there's what's called textual truth, meaning as such. In other words, sometimes we see that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi might have, understood a Mishnah differently, even might have a slightly different reading of the Mishnah, or even gears of the Mishnah. Now, the fact is that the historical truth was only one Mishnah. I mean, that's what Shaul Lieberman says. Historical and Mishnah, but that's not important. To understand the text, it's not important what historical truth is. You understand how the text is working, it's important to understand how did the text understand that Mishnah? What was the Messiah? What was the tradition in Bavel? Doesn't in the Bavli, or what was the tradition in El Yisrael, the Yerushalmi, in order to understand the Mishnah? In other words, historical truth, we can make all different type of hasharas, all type of hypotheses, which are usually wrong. Textual truth.
Why are they usually wrong?
Usually wrong because you're basing all these hypotheses are based at second guessing, right, the original sources. The proper way to understand the text is how did that text understand its tradition? And Shaul Lieberman says, whoever doesn't understand a text as such, his methodology is flawed. So in other words, if I want to understand the Mishnah and Tosefta, right, you can make a very nice literary analysis and comparing the two texts, the Mishnah and Tosefta, but that's not really probably relevant to understanding the Talmudic text. The Talmudic text had a certain tradition how the Mishnah and Tosefta was to be understood. And that's the most, why is that most important? The most important is because that will explain how the relevance which these texts saw, right, as to how these things should be interpreted. In other words, to understand the rabbinical text is not important what the real Messiah is. The question is how the rabbinical text understand its Messiah. Because that is the concept of what you would call tradition and, the traditional, traditional Messiah, I would say transmission of Judaism. And that certainly, as being religious Jews from Jews, that's tradition to which we find, that's tradition which is not only the most, but the only one which is relevant. Yeah.
If the textual truth contradicts the historical truth, or potentially contradicts the historical truth.
But historical truth we can never know. We can never know what historical truth is. Historical truth we can never know. We have no way of getting at historical truth.
Shouldn't we try and investigate the historical truth as opposed to textual truth?
But the historical...
Otherwise the whole Masorah is based upon a potential falsehood.
So I want to say two things. First of all, number one is that there's two problems. I think there's an ontological problem and an epistemological problem. The epistemological problem is we can never really get at historical truth because we have no way of knowing it. In other words, no one's going to tell us what the historical truth is. We can only make hypotheses and guesses. They might be right, might be wrong. That's number one. Number two is, what are we interested in? We're really interested in is, how do we explain, in other words, the chain of tradition right, which view this text in a certain way. In other words, if I want to understand, why do I understand the Mishnah? Because I want to understand the Gemara. Why do I understand the Gemara? Because, you know, I'm sorry, why do I understand the Gemara? Because I want to understand the Mishnah. In other words, if I want to understand the people in the Gemara who are most directly tied to that tradition, their view of that tradition, right, not only by virtue of their historical proximity, but that's ultimately, right, the way I want to understand the text. In other words, the way the Gemara understood the Mishnah, I can understand that with certainty. In other words, that's clearly the way to understand the text. It was the purpose of studying rabbinical literature is to understand rabbinical text. The rabbinical text itself understood a tradition in a certain way. By understanding how the rabbinical text understood its tradition, then I can understand the rabbinical text. If, in fact, I'm trying to track the second guess rabbinical text, I can never understand the rabbinical text. I might create a theory explaining, you know, a Mishnah or some phenomenon in the past, but I'll never be able to understand the text in and of itself. That's what I want to claim. Yeah.
Without mentioning names, can you just give an example of the kind of a methodology that would be
right, right. Through? The Gemara, for example, the Gemara makes a statement.
Because if I open a book, how do I know whether this author is using historical truth or textual truth?
In other words, let's assume we have the Mishnah, and the Gemara makes statements about the Mishnah. The Gemara makes statements of the Mishnah. So, in other words, I can understand the purpose of the Mishnah, the role of the Mishnah, right? By looking at the Gemara, which is coming, because basically the Gemara is coming to interpret the Mishnah. There's a clear, continuous line of tradition from the Mishnah to the Gemara. In other words, the Rambam and all the Gaonim and all of their letters, the Rambam's introduction, believe that there aren't any black holes here. In other words, the Gemara makes a statement about the Mishnah. Okay, the Gemara is saying about the Mishnah. We had to take the Gemara's statement back literally, because that's the way the Gemara understood. That was how the Mishnah meant for the Gemara. It might be that I could come and construct another way of understanding the Pshat of the Mishnah. But the historical truth of the Mishnah is not relevant. Neither is not relevant to history, because the Gemara and everything else after that never listened to the Mishnah as such.
It's not relevant, or it's just not possible?
It's not possible.
If we could know it, would it be valid?
No. So first of all, number one, I want to claim that we could never know it.
You build that time machine you were talking about last week.
right.
So you build a time machine. You're not interested in going back to see what happened because it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. First of all, it's impossible. Because, in other words, it's impossible because the only people who saw any value in the Mishnah was the Gemara, were the Talmudic scholars. No one else was interested in the Mishnah. That's number one. Number two, I claim it's irrelevant too. In other words, if I want to understand what is Judaism? What do the rabbis do? When a rabbi learns Gemara, what does he do? So, if I want to understand what a rabbi does when he learns Gemara, I have to see the way rabbis learn Gemara. I can't say, well, the rabbis learn this, Gemara this way, but really Gemara means something else. So why is that important? It's not relevant. Because if I want to understand how the Torah operates, I want to understand, explain how rabbis operate, what is the essence of Judaism, right? I have to explain how the rabbis themselves use their tradition in formulating legal decisions or agadic statements. In other words, it's irrelevant. I can never know the truth, the historical truth. And number two, the purpose is to understand the Jewish texts. For example, let me give you an example. I didn't want to go into this, but we'll go into an example. For example, if I want to understand, right, how did Plato understand the spheres and astronomy? Now, I could say, well, really, Plato was wrong because really everything was for general relativity, but that's irrelevant. I'm interested in how Plato understood things. And Plato didn't understand things like that. In other words, so if I want to really explain how the Greeks thought about things, why is it important what the true nature of reality is? Several paradigm shifts afterwards. Right? Now, why would I want to be interested in how Plato understood it? Because I want to get into Greek thought. Was it important if Plato missed Einstein's gravitational equations. The point is, if I want to understand Greek thought, and I want to understand the Greek civilization, I have to understand how the Greeks themselves understood these types of things. That's the same thing.
Would it be fair to say that the difference would be the Rabbi Tribbetz's viewing the textual truth as a living tradition, whereas somebody looking for historical truth is like an archaeologist trying to see...
That's the Mussar. But the Mussar is that, right, in other words, a religious Jew, a Jew who believes that these texts are meaningful, has to try to understand what was the meaning it had for the rabbis. It might be that someone else could construct some type of other meaning, which might be interesting for him on a scholarly level, but has no relevance to the meaning it has to those people who consider themselves, as we do, part of this tradition. In other words, we have to explain what the tradition means for us. I'm going to go. What I'm saying is that this is an important thing. In other words, if the Rishayim, the Goyim, understood the Gemara as such, and the Gemara understood the Mishnah as such, then basically we are, in other words, that's called understanding the rabbinical tradition.
What's before that? What's the Mishnah trying to understand? Aren't we always going back to the oral Torah?
We don't. We don't have records of that. That's the important thing. Is where was it? Those of you who don't know it, there was actually a blimp. But anyway, in any case, in other words,
what's the mission trying to?
In other words, we don't know. There's no way of knowing this because we don't have any. In other words, the only commentary we have on the Mishnah is the Gemara. We have a Tosefta, but everything else is guesswork. In other words, even if I want to say, and I'm, you know, you have to be a scholar. Rabbi Vega says in several places that we see the Mishnah before Rabbi. And if you open up the scholars, like, for example, let's say, you know, Epstein, this Mishnah's Rabbi Akiva, Mishnah's this, but we don't know really what these Mishnahs are. In other words, they're hypotheses. No one has a compendium of the Mishnahs of Rabbi Akiva.
But in truth, all these texts were trying to analyze and interpret that which came before them, and it must have stopped or started at a certain point.
We don't know, but it's a black hole. We don't know. We don't know what based upon the rabbinical text that we have. We don't really understand how the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us how the Mishnah was put together, but we don't have anything before that. I mean, what do we have before that? Josephus. There's no evidence that we have before that. In other words, the Gemara, even the Sifron, the Sifri, which are actually put together after the Mishnah, are some, like the Rambam, there's a coming to tell me the base of the Mishnah in the Psukim. But we don't have a text that was written before Rebbe. Explain to me how we got to the Mishnah in the first place. That we don't have.
Surely we see a precedent of interpretation going back until a starting point, being there's a certain tradition of continuity.
We don't know what that is. We don't know what that is.
But nevertheless, maybe that means that our method is flawed. Because we see that it goes back, that there was a method.
No, because we don't have any texts. All we have is a text of the Mishnah. One can make a guess what was the Mishnayos like before, you know, before Rabbi Akiva, before Beis Hillel, whatever it is, the dispute between David Zvi Hoffman and the Deres HaRishayim. But it's only guesswork. We don't know. We have nothing. In other words, Epstein can speak about Mishnas Rabbi Akiva, but he really can't point that we don't have Mishnas Rabbi Akiva. These are only Hasharas. That's what I'm claiming. Yeah.
What is Rabbi Tribbetz's understanding of the 1500 years then between Har Sinai and when we first had a text? Obviously, textual truth is now defining truth. But between Har Sinai and the Mishnah, is your understanding that there was a different kind of truth, more of a masorah of just information?
I don't know. Or was certainly it was oral, but exactly how it was is very, very difficult to understand. Now, when I say difficult to understand, it doesn't mean that, you know, Chas v'Shalom, there was a black hole here, and the Mishnah, you know, was created, because we do believe certainly certain things halakha l'Mishnah miSinai. But to go into detail and how these things were. All these things are hasharas. But in other words, they're not relevant. In other words, what's relevant in my life is not to create synthetically a history from Matan Torah to, you know, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi or to, I don't know, Rabbi Meir. Right? But my question, what I want to know is, in other words, how did the Gemara interpret the Mishnah? How did the Gemara look at the Mishnah? Certainly, Chazal, who were right after the time of the Mishnah, probably were historically in a better circumstance to make a better educated, quote-unquote, guess than we can. And secondly, if my purpose is understand Chazal, the Gemara, or understand the Rishayim, or say the Gemara itself through the Rishayim. So in other words, it's more important to understand in the continuity of tradition how each generation understood the tradition from its point of view. That, in my opinion, is a methodology which is consistent, number one. Number two, you can come up with an answer. And number three, is relevant, is the most relevant. That's my opinion. So all of these, I notice that there's new types of studies of Tosefta's based upon literary analysis and based upon this book of the Ballad of the Singers and Singer of Tales and everything. In other words, it's all very nice, and if you put a person on a desert island, he can come up with a very beautiful history. The point is that it has nothing to do with the truth of the Gemara, which I'm calling the textual truth. And that's the living tradition to which we feel a part of, which we are a part of, and that's the only thing which is relevant and which is certain.
Is it possible to have a middle combination of the two? Is it possible for somebody to say there is a black hole in this time period, but that's how a later generation understood the earlier generation?
First of all, that's a guesswork. That's guesswork. Secondly, there's no evidence of a black hole. In other words, all the Rishonim, all the, you know, the Rambam and everything list the continuity of a tradition of a Messiah, and there's no evidence of a black hole.
So that's anyone who says black hole is automatically saying historical truth,
right?
Or
right.
It's a combination.
No, if I take the black hole and use the black hole as an excuse to say that the textual tradition is not accurate, therefore I have something with a historical tradition. Uh-huh. That's what I'm so thinking about. That I reject. Now, if once I arrive at a textual truth, I can find signs of historical truth which supports that. That's fine, Mateva Manoyim. But historical truth is guesswork. It changes every 20 years, right? And it's irrelevant to understanding the rabbinical process. We're interested in the rabbinical process.
And that, does that mean there's no common language between these shiurim and the academics who are using historical truth?
Put it this way. Howard Q would say they're incommensurable conversation, meaning is that scholars, not all scholars, but many scholars would automatically assume that if the Gemara says something, it must be lying. And therefore, what the Gemara says about something, adirab, on the contrary, that's probably not what happened. But if that's true, then everybody's lying. It's like, you know, the theories of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. In other words, but there is a dialogue. In other words, it is true that, a person has to rely upon, it does seem to me that we could say that, well, the Mishnah says is correct, but the Gemara are a bunch of liars. It's inconsistent. In other words, if I'm already jumping to historical truth through a direct analysis of the Mishnah itself, ignoring the Gemara, so I'm assuming a textual truth of what? Of the Mishnah itself. Why should I assume that too? Maybe the Mishnah is lying. In other words, in the important thing is what is the meaning of the text? In other words, what the people who created the rabbinical text, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Tosefta, the Rishayim, right? How did they understand the tradition is important for understanding what they say, how they understood things, but more importantly is they were probably in the best position to understand it. After all, they were part of that tradition. That was part of that tradition.
So Rabbi Trulitz, you've just insulated yourself against any attack from any historical... Somebody walks in here today with a Dead Sea Scroll saying that... Whatever it is, not the Dead Sea... Some manuscript saying, punk for care from what you're saying. It's irrelevant.
So I'll go to Gehenna with a Bayan Rava. Okay, fine. Now, after that introduction... Let's go on and see more how the Rishonim understood Truth of Text.
One more question on that.
Yes.
When Rambam, for example, says that the Gemara was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael.
Yes.
And it had to be written down because of the difficult times that they're experiencing.
Well, that's a machlok, is what the Rambam really means by that.
What Rabbi Trutz is saying is it's absolutely irrelevant about whether there was a historical upheaval, irrelevant about whether there was an official acceptance. The fact the Rambam says it means for our purposes it's true, it's textually true, and therefore...
Right, in other words, you know, why is it important? Because like this, if the Rambam says that all of Klal Yisrael accepted the Gemara, that's the truth of Judaism. The truth of Judaism is accept the Gemara. In other words, if someone wants to say, well, I don't accept the Gemara, fine, very good. But in other words, I don't accept the Rambam either. Rambam's a liar.
Even at the time, there were people who did not accept the Quran. All the way through history, there have been people who have denied the validity of the tradition we're looking at.
I understand that. But if I'm trying to... they might have not accepted the Chassidus HaShatz at the Karayim.
Correct.
But in other words, but I would understand the rabbinical tradition. In other words, rabbinical tradition to me, in other words, no, it could possibly be the Karayim said, look, I don't want to accept it. But the fact is, those who accepted it, right, how do they look at it? How do they understand it? Okay? In other words, if someone said, I don't accept the Talmud, fine. But the fact is, those people who accepted it, now why am I interested in the Talmud? Because someone accepted it. We're not giving a shim on Karaite literature. In other words, those people who accepted, why did they accept it? They accepted it because they felt that there was a uniform and an acceptance, a popular acceptance based upon the entire Jewish people. That's what the Rambam says. And that helps me understand rabbinical literature after this. Why can in the Rosh and Damit Gimel and Sanhedrin, why can the Rishonim, how can Rishonim don't argue on the Kabbalah? They can even argue on Goyim, right? The answer is because they accepted the Gemalah. If we don't accept the Gemalah, then we can't explain the Goyim and the Rishonim. Now, maybe there's some Karaim living somewhere in the world. I'm interested in their history, but I'm interested in understanding Jewish rabbinical history, which includes Goyim, Rishonim, Achorim, etc. until here. Then what? I have to understand how the Rishonim understand the Gemalah.
Taking this argument to the extreme, the historical truth of Har Sinai is almost irrelevant. As long as the Mishnah and Gemara accept there was Matan Torah, so you've insulated yourself against any attack proving the Matan Torah never happened as well.
Because the importance of what you said to me is how the Gemara understand Matan Torah.
Or the Torah text that we have today.
Right, if I want to understand Matan Torah, I have to learn Pei Zayin, Pei Ches, Pei Tes, and Shabbos. Is that important? If some archaeologist comes and does some type of a survey in the Judean desert and comes up with a different version of Matan Torah, that's how I have to understand it.
In other words, so Judaism is not a science, which is
in... For sure not. For sure not.
But then, what is it then? If it's a tradition, so...
We'll speak about what it is. That'll be the last few shows. Okay? It is what it is. It's too big for either of them. Okay, fine. Now, let's go further. Now that we've cleared the air of certain things, okay, then we can go further like this. Now, first of all, I want to give two other examples in Rishonim. I mean, there are hundreds of examples. We can go on for the next 20 years giving examples, and we might not continue for the next 20 years. But in any case, I want to give more examples of how Rishonim understood the redaction of the Gemara. Now, I want to go back to the Milchemes, the Ramban. We've had some interesting Rambans up to now. Now we have a more interesting Ramban. There's a, in Bava Metzia, there's a machlokes, Zayin Memches, between Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish, between Reish Lakish, what acquires something about the Torah? We actually mentioned something about the previous Shia. There's a machlokes, Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish, does money acquire something about the Torah or not? In any case, the Rif paskins that, in fact, if a person gives money for, let's say, a commodity, for wheat, and the wheat burns, then until the wheat has been transported, in other words, until the lekech has done meshicha, then, in fact, the liability of the burning of the wheat, if the wheat was not torched, but rather it was accidental or happened by chance, the liability rests with the person selling the wheat, the meicha. That's what the Rif paskins. And the Rif paskins like that. And that's on Chav Chesam Mud Beis in the Dapi HaRif in the Gemara. And the Balamor argues on the Rif. And the Balamor makes very, very strong arguments for the Sugya regarding the Rif. Comes the Ramban, and of course defends the Rif. By the way, this Machlokes Ramban and the Balamor is a very interesting Machlokes. I'm not going into all the details, but it's a very fascinating Machlokes. So, in other words, he understands, the Balaam understands, is that, in other words, that this issue is a dispute between the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish itself too. In other words, that in fact, actually, if in the wheat burns, so maybe, you know, according to Rabbi Yochanan, where Kesef is Koina, the kingdom was, in other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, in other words, there will be a nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish if the wheat is burnt. In other words, or in other words, or according, in other words, that would be one of the between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In other words, if in fact actually, in other words, when a person gives the money, right, does the burning of the wheat, in fact, actually, in other words, whose liability it is? Because of the Rambam, it says, va'oit, it could possibly be, the efshir the lake of B'nai Omidi. In other words, the Gemara asks a question, what's a nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? What's a nafkamina? And the Gemara brings a far out case of a guy buying something with a milveh. A far out case. So actually, one of the, in other words, one of the arguments of the Balamor is that if in fact actually, as the Rambam was claimed, it could be this could be a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how could the Gemara didn't bring this as a nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in case that we burn it? So says the Ramban, the important thing, Melchemes, V'oi, the Evshin Lake of B'nai Amidi. Could possibly be there was no machloik, no practical consequence between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and whether Kesef, money acquires Menatera or not. V'ayita mina milzul l'shchicha, l'gozlu, b'rabbanon. And now which the Gemara said, what's the dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? The machloik is a case where you acquire something with a milzul, which is the made part, which is not gross, is not shchir. They weren't geyser. Svar the Gemara. The Gemara is a svar. The Gemara. The Gemara made it up. Gemara made it up. V'loy mistama milsa. It's prep. In other words, it's not for sure what Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish were arguing on. In other words, what's the Gemara claim? The Gemara is saying in this Bilchemes that the Gemara says, what's the practical consequence of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, right? The practical consequence is case X, which is a far-out case. Says the Gemara made up the case. They're not arguing on anything, at least anything that's relevant here. Which means the Gemara took... Well, how do we understand how do we understand what the Milchemes is saying? Why would the Gemara make up a case? Very simply, the Gemara was interesting discussing a case in which a person buys something which was called debate part, in other words, money that's owned, with a monetary value, he buys something with that. And the Gemara was discussing, right, does it acquire it or not? It's something in between money and barter. And the Gemara was discussing it. And then the Gemara decided, it's a machlok, this is probably machlok Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. It was the Gemara, this truth. Now what the Gemara is saying is, the text did not understand that this was an actual dispute between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. They weren't arguing on this, but the text took about Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, which has nothing to do with this, and basically constructed this nafkamina, this as an example of what was between them, but it has nothing to do with what they're arguing about. Very interesting. So in other words, what's the Ramban saying? The Ramban saying is that you can have a machlokas amohayim, and the Gemara, and there's really, or you can have statements of a Baraim, and might be no nafkamina between them, and the Gemara can come along and construct a case and say that's a nafkamina between them. Which is an example how it's called Svara de Gemara. Now, we've accounted this term Svara de Gemara. So Baraim says, Rav Shmuel Goyen, the people who great Svara. In other words, what the Ramban is saying is that I would say that this was after the time of Avashi. The Sabarai in those 67 years that we're speaking about were actually discussing, one of the things they're discussing is different issues which had not come up within the context of previous statements of Amorayim. And what they did was they took two statements of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish and actually said that this would be a machlokes between them. In fact, I'm even tempted to say that, in fact, it might be Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish was just speaking about where something comes from a positive, but there's no practical difference between them. In other words, it's interesting. Why should you be machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish? Everybody agrees Kesef is not kinder. They're just arguing in a way to derive something. It's interesting. Rashi goes on and says the nafkamina got the kedusha. The Gemara doesn't mention the nafkamina. I'm saying this. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, according to Rabban, we're both describing from whence do we know that you acquire something with Bishicha and not through Kesef. They weren't arguing anything. They were just giving a makor. The Gemara created a machloikas, and from this, the Gemara created a consequence in the case of Mil, but it has absolutely nothing to do with what they were arguing about, what they're speaking about. And that's what the Ramban is saying.
So So, according to the Ramban, the riff then goes back to the original...
No, no, the riff is something different. The Ramban is arguing the Balamor. The Ramban is just saying is... I'm going to read the Ramban again because people don't believe me. After the Lake of Benomidi, there's no Nafka Mina between them. They were just telling you, where do I get the concept of the Mashiach? Do I get it from the Torah? Or do I get it from the... Like, for example, if I ask a question here in this room, how do I know Mashiach? So you say, it's a Pasuk. You say, no, really, but not Torah, it's a Gezeira. But you're not arguing. You're just asking for Makor of something. Then all of a sudden, I take a certain case on the side that you're arguing on that. Lake of Benomidi, there's no Nafka Mina between, there's no distinction between them. And the whole thing is svar the Gemara, the Gemara svara, but it had nothing to do with what he intended to say.
But he's defending the riff's psak halacha.
Oh yeah, right.
Because the riff doesn't have to.
The riff doesn't have to answer this. The riff doesn't have to give an explanation, right, to the Baal HaMaor. How can the Gemara bring the case of burning wheat? Because we can explain it as such.
So Rishon can argue on a sub-aram.
No! Who's talking about Sabarayim? The Ramban is defending the Riff against the Balamor. The Balamor says, how come the Gemara didn't give this Nafka Mina? How come the Gemara have a strange Nafka Mina? So the Ramban is saying, that's not the Nafka Mina of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. The Gemara created a Nafka Mina.
The Sabarayim said this. They said this is a Nafka Mina.
And that's it. But is that, in other words, there's no Nafka Mina between them.
So the Riff is being chaylik on the Sabarayim.
He's not being chaylik on the Sabarayim.
Ignoring the Sabarayim.
No. The Riff paskens like a Birkan for this for a different reason. But he's saying is that if you're bothered by the fact, how come this is not Birkan Reish Lakish? When the Gemara said Ikebenea, there was no Ikebenea on anything. The Riff is not paskening based upon Birkan Reish Lakish. The Riff paskens for a different reason. That, like a Birkan. The Gemara presents a Machlis of Birkan Reish Lakish. Or asks on the Riff, how come he didn't bring a Nafkamina? How can he bring a strange Nafkamina? So comes about Ramban says is that there was no nafkamina between them, that the Gemara created a nafkamina, but you shouldn't take the machloikas here seriously. Have to look for a nafkamina. In other words, if there's a machloikas and the Gemara didn't bring a nafkamina, you have a raya. But really, there was no nafkamina between them. The Riff understood there was no nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Gemara created a svara. In other words, the svara the Gemara created as a nafkamina has no bearing on Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were really arguing on.
What would the Baal HaMaor say? How would he say it?
The Baal HaMaor you learn like that? No, the Baal
HaMaor... The Baal HaMaor is saying that the Gemara understood there was machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan.
Right.
Because they were describing the implication of their machlokas.
Yeah.
And the Ramban is saying the Savarayim are making up new stuff that wasn't Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan.
Right.
And the Riff is not Pascha, is going back to
the original source. So like this, I tell you, I didn't want to really give a shiur on this, because actually it turns out this machlokas of the Milchemes and the Baal HaMaor is actually a complicated machlokas. Because what happens is that as we're going to get to that, this will be a good thing for the next thing I want to speak about. The Baal HaMaor is producing a very, the Baal HaMaor has a very, very convincing reading of the Gemara. The Ramban's argument about war is that you're being chaylik and all the poskim, all the goyim, who paskim, not like that. It seems that the Milchemes is doing is the Milchemes is trying to miyashav the psak with the Gemara. In other words, it seems to be that there was a besair of psak, and that's what the Milchemes seems to be claiming this entire Milchemes. The Bible says, yeah, but the Gemara doesn't read like that. So Milchemes is basically saying, okay, doesn't really like this, but in fact, actually, you're being arguing on all these poskim. I'll be miyash of the poskim. In other words, the machlokes here is between, is the psak, the way I understand it, to be the truth of the text, right? Or here, how did the Ga'anim see the text?
So Robert is making this also... sound almost like
the Machlokes. No, but it's a little bit different because we believe the text too. But in other words, what the Milchemes is doing is, this is the way Gaidim saw the text. You're arguing all the Gaidim. You're arguing about Baal HaMaor. Who gives you a chutzpah? How old are you, Baal HaMaor? No, what you're arguing all the... This is the way the Gaidim saw the text. Ah, the Gemara doesn't like that. The Gaidim obviously found that the Gemara created a Svara. The Svara of the Gemara. That's what I think the Milchemes is arguing the Baal HaMaor. But in any case, what I want to do is... Now that we're speaking about that, I want to go to a Gemara of a Kama. Okay, but what do we get from this example? That a Sfarta Gemara can take two statements of a Baraya, who are not actually arguing necessarily, and create an Afkamina. Now, look at the Mechadish yourselves. Now, Daf Ayin above a Kama is an incredible. How much time do we have?
25 minutes.
Okay, fine. Daf Ayin of an Alchem of a Kama is a beautiful case. The Gemara there discusses, if I write, what's called the Hashah. In other words, I give a person power of attorney. Alchasa. I don't want to give the whole shiur Alchasa. But then the Gemara says, right? The Gemara says, Now, do I say, Loikas bin Alkasa Metaltli. We don't write an Alkasa, a Shah, a power of attorney, on if a person sends someone to get Metaltli, to get portable objects. Then the Gemara, discusses this. Then the Gemara says, Iga da Ame, Loikas bin Alkasa Metaltli de Kafre. If you don't write a power of attorney, a Metaltli, the person was already claimed. The person always says, I don't have it. Why? Because it looks like Sheker. But in fact, actually, but otherwise, you can write an Alkasa. Okay,
what's
now.
What's the case?
Well, another case is I send the Shliach. Now, the Shliach to get the Metalton for the person and say, I want to be mocked in the Metalton of the person to the Shliach. But the guy says, I don't have it. So it's Mechzik Hashikra. It looks like you say something false. Now, Taisvis says an incredible thing. By the way, Derech Agav, I want to show you, you know, Taisvis, this shows you, interesting. Taisvis is incredible. Taisvis says, I'm a Talmud de Kafre, Kosav Rabbeinu Chananel. Says Rabbeinu Chananel, Ha'edna. Now, even though the Gemara, first of all, the Gemara says, you don't write an Akasa at all. Then the Gemara says, you don't write an Akasa if the person's denied that he has the object to make the acquisition. So says Rabbeinu Chananel, Ha'edna Nagu. Now there's a minig, there's a custom. L'chtoiv akasa, to write an akasa, even a metalta de kafre, even if the person denies it. Kenaka the Gemara. The Gemara has two opinions. You write it, do you never write it, or you write it if he's not denying something. Now we write it if he's denying something. Kenaka the Gemara. That's the minig. V'taima lo yadana. We don't know, says the Rabbeinu Chananel. We don't know why we do something like this. Connect the Gemara. Okay, comes a bit of time, and he can give me a base of the Gemara. Comes a bit of time, and says basically, he brings from a Gemara in Shavuos, a sugya in Shavuos, that is mashma, that what's the reason you can't write an Alkasa? It's because it's, right? It's Mesa Keshikra, but we don't hold with Mesa Keshikra. In other words, there's a statement of Rav Papi that's worried about Mesa Keshikra. Things are going to look, and we don't hold like Rav Papi. Lisa. In other words, the whole reason is because of Mesa Keshikra. It looks like it's false, and we're not kosher. We don't worry about these things. Rav Papi's worried about Mesa Keshikra. So in other words, very very good. So therefore, that's true. So the whole Gemara here is based upon Mesek Hashik. We don't hold like that. Very nice. Now, what's the problem? The problem is in several sukkahs, says Taisvis, in Shavuos, in Lechoyles, right? The Gemara brings, right? Right? From, right? The Gemara brings it from the statement that we're Mesek Hashik. In other words, we bring the Hadoi. In other words, the reason we pass in not a kind of Hadoi, because the Hadoi is working with Mesek Hashikra, and some sukkah is mashma that what we conclude we're not Mesek Hashikra. But that's true, there are several sukkahs in Shas that bring from Hadoi, which means we are worried about Mesek Hashikra. How could the Gemara bring riots from a legal decision that we reject? So says Taisvis in the credible say this. Says Taisvis. Yesh loimar, the orach of the Gemara, it's the derech of the Gemara, lemifrach, to ask a question, mimilsa, from a legal decision, from something, avogad the laisa, even though we don't hold like it. the way, this statement isn't Rishonim Shas, but I want to bring it on the Gemara itself. There's a reason I brought this Taisva. In other words, Taisva says, sometimes we'll ask a kasha. It's the derech of the Gemara, not like once or twice in Shas. It's the derech of the Gemara to ask a kasha from something, the leisa. We don't hold of it. It is not. I mean, Taisvis had no problem saying this. I'll ask a question. How could that possibly be? Why would the Gemara ask a kasha from something the legs of them not all with it? Now, we actually spoke about this. I think we spoke about this in Testament Beis and Shabbos a little bit. But now the Taisvis says it explicitly with Rav Shubin Levi. Why would the Gemara, and by the way, the Nitzvah says it's a Kiddushin, I brought for the Taisvis here because it was a reason, as you say, a little while, I brought the Taisvis over here. Why would the Gemara ask, the Stam of the Gemara, ask from a halacha, the lay say that the Gemara rejects? Okay, now, this is what I'm speaking about with the textual truth. Now that we spoke about textual truth. First of all, what is Taisvis doing? What is Taisvis doing? The Gemara makes a conclusion. There's actually two ikkar d'amris in the Gemara, but whatever it is, the Gemara has one of two conclusions. The Beit HaNadol makes note, our minhag, our custom, contradicts both conclusions. Contradicts both conclusions. Comes Rabbeinu Tam and says, no, I'll prove to you legally that there's a basis for the minhag. What's interesting is, what is Rabbeinu Tam doing? Rabbeinu Tam understands that if this is the minhag, then we have to find some type of a hesbeh, some explanation with the Talmudic text. Now, this is what I call a textual truth. What do we see? We see that rabbinical commentators, many times, were motivated to learn in certain ways because they had to somehow reconcile minhag, the custom, right, with the legal text. Anyone who learns Poiskim, if anyone learns Poiskim as Maratzeh, you'll see that many times, Poiskim, in fact, that's one of their chores, is to somehow justify Minhagim, which are Tamua, which are appear to be strange from a strict halakhic point of view, but nonetheless, many times the Poiskim will go back to the Shas, and some of the most brilliant Shuvahs are usually Shuvahs that are coming to justify certain Minhagim. Now, this is what the Taisvah says. Now, we get a Yisoid in Taisvus. I do know that this is Taisvus, not the Gemara, but if we understand that rabbinical commentators, there's a tradition.
Yeah. Taisvus and Poskim aren't looking at the Gemara to derive a conclusion. They already know the answer, and they're looking backwards at the Gemara to make it
right, right. Now, like this. Now, what I want to say is, I want to say this Taisvus gives us a Yisoid. What's this Yisoid? Well, first of all, I want to claim this Yisoid is actually a drasha in Shiur Zecha Abba Mare of Rabban Shri Yisrael B'Yosha Ben Soloveitchik. There, in the first volume of the Shiur Zecha Abba Mare, this was the Yortzeit Shiur, he has a Shiur, it begins on Daf Resh Bem Aleph, page 241, called Shnei Sugim Meseiras, two types of tradition of Meseira. B'Yosha Ben says, I'm going to really summarize it for you, on Daf Resh Bem Tes, B'Yosha Ben says, that there's two Mesayas. There's a Mesayas Halima. That's the give and take, the dialectic, the scholarly dialectic. And then there's a Mesayas Hamaisa. There's a tradition, there's practice. And a practice, a practice. In other words, there's practice, the way Klal Yisrael, you would say in Yiddish, Filzach, you know, the way Klal Yisrael, the practice of Klal Yisrael, practical. Now, says Rabbi Yosha Be'o, later on, on in Chelek Kei here, beginning that Fresh Dun Vav, Resh Dun Zayin, says Rabbi Yosha Be'er, what was the Chasimas HaShas? That's our Shi'ur. What was Chasimas HaShas? Says Rabbi Yosha Be'er, what happens is, the Shas, what happened to Chasimas HaShas is, that the Beseiras HaLimud, you know, why is it, what is this phenomenon that Klai Yisrael has to follow the Shas, according to the Rambam and the Zagdama? So says Rabbi Yosha Be'er, the phenomenon, or the halachic element, the content of the Chasimas HaShas, the significance, is that the Masechas HaLimud became the Masechas HaMaisa. In other words, says Rabbi Yishmael, what was heretofore, a Masechas HaLimud became Masechas HaMaisa, now became the practical hug of Klal Yisrael. That's Rabbi Yishmael says. Now, I don't want to go into what he says so much because there's a lot to speak about here. But I want to say the following thing. Now, once again, this obviously cannot, you know, describe near any sugya, but I want to say we see something interesting over here, too. One of the important things after Rav Ashi Soif Hayor might have been is that if, in fact, the Gemara now is going to become that which is accepted by all the Jewish people, there has to be a convergence between these two traditions, the Masechas HaLimud and the Masechas HaMaisa. In other words, if the Gemara is now going to become the Nachala, there's going to be a new Matan Torah. The Rambam's Maaseh is a new Matan Torah, right? It can't, like the angel says, it can't stay in the Shamayim as they brought down to earth. Meaning that what? That, in other words, there has to be some type of a reconciliation or resolution between what happens in the Abba Amis of Halacha and between the, you know, the hawk of the nation. No, it could possibly be that much of the Shaklat Batalya of the Gemara is coming to resolve a contradiction between the abstract legal decisions and practical unhook of Klal Yisrael. In other words, what Tosfos does to this, what Rabbeinu Tam does to this Gemara, might very well be what? What the Ashi and those who came later on were doing to the early Moroyim. Now, I want to claim this makes a lot of sense. Anyone familiar with B'nai Lashon says this makes a lot of sense. Now, if that's true, I want to claim the challenge like this. It might be that in the case, right, it might be that sometimes the Gemara will say, look, the minhag in this case is not to be choshet for halacha, like b'chazik, you know, mesek shikra. Why? Not because be'etzem, not because we really reject the concept. No, we are worried that things shouldn't think like they're shikra, that they're false. Right? But in this case, there's already a minhag, and somehow, you know, we can undo the minhag. But it doesn't mean that theoretically, I don't, in other words, I don't have to worry about Mechsa Keshikra. So in other words, in another Shaklat Batalya, the Gemara might actually bring a statement which says, we're worried about Mechsa Keshikra, because Hecha Shenogu Nogu, where Klal was Noyeg, we're Noyeg. But it doesn't mean that the principle was thrown out, which means I could ask a Kasha in some other place where a Midak has not been established, and I might demand in that other place that we have to be Chosh for Mechsa Keshikra. So in other words, like this, there's minhag and there's halacha, two Masechuses. In other words, where the Masechus HaMaisa, the practical Masecha, right, has somehow voted this decision out in this point, okay, because I'm not going to tamper with it. That's, according to the Rambam, that's one of the loisasur. But it doesn't mean that I throw out the legal decision. In another case, where there isn't a clear minhag, it might be that, in other words, I might say that I am something is Masechus Shikra, and I reject it, and I might use that principle adjudicated in some other case too. So in other words, I think that this is an explanation why the Gemara might bring a halacha somewhere else, which it rejects previously, because it's not that legally, conceptually, we reject halacha. It's just that in one case, the halacha was not like that. So, in other words, in this Tosfos, of course, I mean, Tosfos tells us what's going on in the Gemara. But we see the way that Rabbeinu Tam learns that this is a very, very plausible way of understanding the discrepancy in the different sugyas. Now, this is I claim this is an interesting case of a textual truth. In other words, basically, we see how the Rishonim understood the Gemara, what they were doing on the Gemara, and given the fact that we believe in a tradition that, you know, dor v'dorshav, that in fact, actually, this could possibly be the way the Bali Gemara understood, in other words, at the time of the redaction of the Gemara, right, what was needed in order to give the Shas, to give the Talmud, the status which it had afterwards, if there would have been a discrepancy between the theoretical legal text of the Shas and the meaning of Klal Yisrael, then it could possibly be that, in other words, the Shas would not have been able to have been accepted in the way in which the Rambam claims it was. So I think that this is, you know, now of course we can't say this is what motivates every sugya. This kachim, this sugya is in Bavli and Tyrus. I mean, you can't say there's a minhag ha'maase in kachim in the 5th century AD when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for 300 years. But in other words, but certainly there's no doubt about it that, in other words, certain sugyas we can understand it as such.
In previous shiurim, we've talked about the, and maybe not the shiurim, the concept that sometimes there's a period of ish or whatever where the actual, the minhag, the Masoris HaMaisa has to be overruled and a new psak is reached by hachra between the sugyas. And if you like, what people have been doing is wrong and it has to be changed because now we've seen these rishonim, it really should be like this.
Okay, that's
this goes against what we're really saying.
This, that right. That, rather, what you said is really basically, that's a theme that's developed by the Netziv. And yes, he has three hakdamas in his first hakdama to Emek Shaila. The Netziv even goes so far as to say that the Yeshua Melech, I think, put the Aaron in Geniza, according to one Mandamal and Yuma, in order that people should somehow forget. There was a intentional forgetting, and then decreased pill pull, etc., etc. That's a very interesting thing. I subscribe. I might have been mixed us, but not complete to what the Nesiv says. I would actually like to describe that and speak about that maybe in a later shiurim, because up to now we're just speaking about the Gemara itself. But the fact is, we haven't spoken really so much about, well, where was it written down and why was it written down? In other words, we all agree, whether we go like the Shitas of the Sfaldim or the Sfadish version of the Igeres Hashua Goyin, or they go with the Ashkenazi version of the Igeres Goyin. In other words, there is evidence, certainly according to the Ashkenazi Rishonim, that the Gemara was not written down until the 8th century. Why was it written down at that point? For what reason? Why? What was the change from oral to written tradition? This L'chayra has absolutely doesn't ostensibly have anything to do with what we're speaking about over here. It's going to be oral written. So the fact is, I mean, I'm sure Goyin himself says that the Gemara was actually written down during the time of Sefarayim. Actually, he says that, and I think that the Yisdayim Talmud, and the Deres Rishonim himself says it was written down during the time of Sefarayim. In other words, even Deres Rishonim agrees that the time of Ashi, the Gemara is not written down yet. Why am I speaking about this? Because it seems to me is that the concept of Shechacha might have to do with new types of analyses, new types of, in other words, the Tosefta in Talmud by Hillel. The Gemara says the Chof Bar Aleph in Sukkah that Nishkecha and Hillel was miyaset. Tera again, so the Tosefta says in the Sanhedrin, I think in Perim Beis, in fact, actually Hillel brought 7 midas when he came to Yerushalayim. But already this is a tremendous, this is a big sugya which we're going to speak about, because redaction is not only the redaction of the text, but actually it's writing down the text. It could possibly be that writing down the text is a event which is no less significant than actually its redaction. So,
Back to the leaving that point aside. The point, so if we're saying now with this approach that sometimes the Masoris HaLimud has to be brought in line with the Masoris HaMaisa,
right,
we see that what guides the Masoris HaMaisa? Is that we believe in some kind of hashkocha, that the way that people
do
things are...
The Rambam,
we see around us that all sorts of things start to be done in all sorts of ways for all sorts of bad
things. That's a good question, too. All I can do is quote the Gemara in some of Vav Ben Aleph. I spoke about some of Vav Ben Aleph in Pesachim, where Hillel, well, B'nai B'Seira don't know whether to be a Korban Pesach. So Hillel comes, and of course, you know, he makes the Gzera Shav of Moyadoi. Mm-hmm. Then they ask them, well, how are they going to bring the Sakin? So Hillel doesn't know. So he says, okay, Chai Yisrael, Menem Nevinim B'nai Nevinim. Which means that somehow, in other words, the halacha does recognize, and in fact, the Rambam in Parakal Hichas Mamrim does say that minhag is one of the elements of leisasa. There's minhag, there's takanas and gezeiros, and then there's halacha l'moshe b'sinai, and then of course there's the gemidas. So, in other words, there's no question about it that minhag is a halachic particle. It's a halachic element. You know, I treat it not much different. And the Rosh Hashanah of Etchikas, it begins this year by speaking about the famous meeting between the Rezina Rebbe, who claimed he discovered Techeles, and the Beis Halevi. And the Beis Halevi didn't want to hear his arguments. In fact, actually, in the Rishon Shushelis Bris, the story goes that he asked him how much it costs. And he said it costs a little bit more, he said that's too much. But in other words, the Beis Halevi didn't want to hear it. Because can I get the Messiah? In the Shas, it's clear, we don't have Techeles. That's Kla'ila, we're worried about, you know. So in other words, basically the Beis Halevi was saying that Messiah, there's a chatzah called Messiah. And that has to be reckoned with in Halakha later.
Do you think that since the modern world believes in historical truth very strongly,
yeah.
Do you think that this is a tension which the people who have Techeles, for example,
yeah.
Is this a modern understanding of historicism which is trying to impose itself onto Messiah's the textual truth?
I don't want to go into the issue of Techeles.
But is that any other examples?
I think it's messianic. But I think this is actually only three more minutes left. It's worth it to speak about this because I could claim that actually philosophically, conceptually, my understanding of textual truth is really, really ontologically the truth of the world and not the historical truth of what people think there is. Just as much in other words, I claim that I'm taking much more of a modernist approach than the scholars, but that will have, we'll have to speak about hermeneutical processes and Gadamer, truth and method, etc. And this is not the time. I want to once again mention that since next week I'm going to be busy with a Hasidah and Sheva Bochus, which will not allow me to give this year at this undisclosed place at the time. So therefore, there's going to be a break for next week's year. Basically, will not take place. If you're in Yerushalayim, come to the Hasidah. And we'll give everybody a week off. I want to encourage people to ask questions, comments, criticisms, critiques, whatever it is. And the Mitzvah Shem to be continued in 2 weeks. Okay? Be well.